Mini episode 1788 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1788. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you today with one of our favorite dignitaries here in the FDH Lounge, a great sports writer from our Sports Central, Fran Stuckberry. And most of the time when we have him on the show, the overwhelming amount of times that we have him on the show, it's to talk football at some level, and more often than not, college football. And if you guessed that's what we're doing today, then you guessed correctly, because this is our preview for both the 2024-2025 college football playoff and the overall college bowl season. We're going to take a look at everything. We're going to lead in a second here with some breaking news right as we're going live to tape here. We had some big news come across the transom. We'll address that before we get to anything else. And with that, I bring in Fran Stuckberry. Fran, always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for being here today, my friend.
Thanks, Rick. As I'm also known as the Real Deal, and I have lots of real comments and opinions, and this college football bowl season, breaking news, beep, 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 beep.
That's right. That's right. Now, I believe you have the Real Deal trademark, so congratulations on that. But beyond that, the big news that we have to get to that you just mentioned there and that I teased a second ago, and I will further tease, by the way, before I get to it, that Fran and I will break this down in more depth next month. After the college football playoff is done, we're going to do a recap of the bowl season and the season itself, and we will also separately record a coaching analysis slash, I think we'll probably also look at the transfer portal and all of the moves that are happening right about now, the recruiting, all of that, which will be serve as sort of an early preview of the 2025 college football season. And we had, I guess you would say, one of the first big shoe to drop for the 2025 college football season, something that would have been unthinkable a week ago. The rumors have been swirling, and quite frankly, they seem to be a little bit fantastical until Bill Belichick himself started to give credence to them. It is happening. Bill Belichick, against all odds, going for a college football job, and not even a top-tier one, no offense to North Carolina, but he will be a Tar Heel from here on in. And as I was saying to you off-air, I have to think, being a part of the ACC, which is certainly softer than the Big Ten and the SEC, has something to do with it, because getting the automatic spot is certainly about 10 times easier in the ACC than it is in either of the other two conferences. And he must think that he's going to have the talent that is going to be recruited there and the cachet to be able to get an at-large spot if need be. And that's where, as I also said to you a second ago off air, his son, Steve Belichick, coming over from Washington, where he's the defensive coordinator, getting somebody who's already enmeshed in the NIL system and working in it right now. His son, who on the face of it, you know, one might think, oh, Nepo hire. His son might actually be useful to him in the regards of helping him to get acclimated to what college football is today, which is wildly different than what it was even when Bill Belichick was in the NFL a couple of years ago and recruiting from college.
It's very interesting, Rick. It's crazy. You think a guy that lives NFL, breathes NFL, and he went with Tom Brady. So was he going to get the control in the NFL, Rick? I doubt it. Was he going to have the perfect team with the perfect quarterback to build and win championships? He wasn't. He decided to let's go to college and let's make sure my son is taken care of.
Yeah, I think that's the case. And I will say, FDH Lounge original dignitary Chris Galloway, who has been sort of our lead NFL analyst in recent years, he and I were texting about this recently. He was texting me that he thought Belichick should take the Bears job. And I said the problem with that is he's going to want personnel control. And, you know, not that the Bears have necessarily been tearing it up personnel-wise the last several years or even before that, but Belichick was a disaster his last couple of years in New England. And even if you go further back, I mean, you go back to the drafts in the 2000s, like first-round pick on Travis Taylor and guys like that. Like, New England really overcame bad drafting over a period of time. That's one of the reasons there. I think Tom Brady got a little bit upset with this. He had to take the below market rate pay all those years at quarterback. It wasn't just like, oh, so we can go get, you know, star players and stuff. They were overpaying for guys like Hunter Henry just to fill spots because they weren't drafting well enough over a period of time. Nobody in the NFL was going to give Bill Belichick the kind of control that he wanted over the entire operation, and I think he was too proud to settle for anything less. He is going to be the czar of the entire program at North Carolina. The way that he's talking right now, he's talking about, you know, redefining what a college program is in the modern age. And I don't doubt that he's probably going to have a blueprint for it. And it's going to be very, very fascinating to watch. And I think all of a sudden, ABC/ESPN, Disney, which was treating the ACC as kind of an afterthought, I think that they're right now they're a little happier than they were a couple of days ago that they televise ACC games.
Well, because Rick, it could have the Colorado effect where you're going to want people to watch.
Yes.
People don't like Bill Belichick. People did not like Deion Sanders. It could be the watch to see. And he bombs in college football, man. The people on Facebook are going to party.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is just, it seems
weird.
Ludicrous.
It's weird, Rick.
Yeah, to think that it's going to work, but yeah, I mean, seeing it happen, it will be one of the fascinating sports stories of 2025, no question about it. And as I'm getting ready to record in the next couple of weeks here, the year in sports on the FDH Lounge Show, I've already slotted in as the number one story of the year, unsurprisingly, this entire new landscape in college football. It has been everything that we thought it would be as far as, oh, we've never seen anything like this before. As far as the mega conferences, the brand new matchups that are happening in them, the brand new playoff that's happening, even the more subtle things like the changes in TV networks, the fact that the SEC is now exclusive to ESPN/ABC. And you will see, by the way, with them having the playoff, they're going to be subletting the two games, predictably the two games going up against the NFL in the first round, as you and I predicted, but they're hanging on to the Notre Dame game. We'll get to that a little bit later. It'll be the first time that any network other than NBC has broadcast a game in South Bend in decades, ever since the exclusive regular season contract with NBC began. But we're going to take a look here before we get into the college football playoff at whatever else we want to talk about for the bowl season. I know there's a couple things you want to highlight. One of the things that I said to you off air is that, and I'm not even necessarily that interested in the matchup itself, but one of those things where, like, the Hawaii Bowl, you know, you're there on Christmas Eve, family around and everything like that, and something to flip on. It's just, you know, do I really care about watching San Jose State versus South Florida? No. And I'm sure my dad is going to be ragging on me for even turning it on in the first place, but it's just fun to watch a game in those surroundings on Christmas Eve. That's one of those atmospheric sporting events that's a tremendous amount of fun. I would go so far as to say I look at that a little bit the same way as I do the Sun Bowl on December 31st, always on the 31st, 2 o'clock on CBS, a rare network game to be televised. That one's going to be Louisville and Washington. And there's just something fun about, you know, you watch the game and it being set in El Paso, and like as the sun is setting at the end of the game there, it's sort of the symbolic close of the year 2024, even a couple hours before the year is officially over. So there's just a couple of fun traditional things during the bowl season, and the restoration of the Hawaii Bowl on Christmas Eve, I think, is a great thing.
I think it definitely is. I mean, the day before that, Rick, we have the famous Idaho Potato Bowl. The Blue Terrace, but I love that the winning coach gets showered with French fries.
Yeah,
that's kind of cool. That's kind of cool. But as far as I mean the bowl matchups. I mean they're all games tend to be 10 to 10.5 teams that care the most. Later in the season, the later games, unless you're in the playoff, do you really care? We shall see.
Yeah. One of the only games anywhere that matches up conference champions, my Ohio Bobcats will be in the Cure Bowl on December 20th. Nobody will be watching it except for folks like me, and even I'll be channel surfing between that, the college football playoff game, and the NFL game going on at the same time, Ohio versus Jacksonville State. We will have an interim coach in there because apparently our coach decided to cuck out, Tim Albin, going to Charlotte of all places. The guy couldn't wait to get a legitimate offer from an actual other school. We have the indignity of losing our coach to Charlotte of all places. But that game there, that was one that you had actually flagged as one that you're interested in seeing. The Camping World Stadium in Orlando hosting the Cure Bowl on ESPN. Well, like I said, ESPN showing that one at the same time that they sublet one of the college football playoff games to TNT.
Actually,
bring
the games on a Friday, Rick. FYI, so you can watch.
Oh, it,
it
is?
Yeah, on a Friday.
Did I just go on this big rant and be misinformed? Okay, wow. Oh, so it's on a work day. Wonderful.
Come on, Rick. I know you lost your coach, but did you lose your memory too?
Evidently. Okay, well, I stand by my rant as far as it may not be up against the other sporting events, but you know what? It's a work day, so screw that.
Friday at noon. I mean, come on, Rick. Everyone's working Friday at noon. Come on.
Yeah, well, I will be, but hopefully nobody from work is tuned in to hear me say I may sneak a few peeks, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But okay, so that's the... All right, so I see that they're staying completely out of the way of the playoff here. You're right about that. So I'm... And I will not edit this out so that my moment of being hilariously misinformed will remain in our mini-episode. But
or as Bobby the Brain Heenan would say, Rick, you are the fountain of misinformation.
I am. Apparently I am. And as is generally the case, whenever I screw anything up, it's interesting enough to leave in, as it is for this time. I will tell you something I'm not misinformed about is that we have a situation now where there is a bowl game being played on the same day as the Army-Navy game, and that is something that I find distasteful. Even if they're going to name it the Salute to Veterans Bowl, Western Michigan against South Alabama in Montgomery, Alabama. Apparently, in this day and age, nothing is sacred. We can't let Army-Navy have their own day in college football as they traditionally have. Disgraceful.
Yeah, definitely, and before that, they have the Cricket Celebration Bowl, Jackson State, South Carolina State. That's going to be at least that game we always played that time. But they're slamming all these bowl games, TV contracts. It's crazy. And then like when you look at some other games, Boca Raton Bowl. I mean, the problem is with that, all the transfers, Western Kentucky, James Madison. I'll take Western Kentucky in that. You have the Art of For LA Bowl, hosted by Gronk, California UNLV. UNLV lost their coach. California quarterback is transferring, supposed to be a hot transfer. So that's a hot fire. You know, I mean, it's just these games are with all transfers and transfers and transfers. The Tulane, Florida, Gasparilla Bowl, the Tulane quarterback transfers.
Yeah.
Come on. It's ridiculous enough. I mean, picking these bowl games is impossible. If I defend my championship in 1 year in a row, Rick, I'm going to play Powerball the following day and probably win that too.
Yeah, because, like you said, you've got that. And the NFL draft is always a consideration anyways because you got players that are sitting out because nobody wants to end up like poor Jake Butt a couple of years ago who ended up really not having a pro career because he effed himself up in his college bowl game that he played in. So, although I saw recently somewhere on the announcer list that I guess he'll be announcing one of the bowls here. So probably advising the kids on the commentary that if you have any kind of an NFL future, you have no business playing in the game. But looking at some of the other combos, unsurprisingly, right, it always tends to be the closer you get to New Year's Day. That's where it kind of ramps up a bit as far as some of the matchups that are a little bit more interesting. The Holiday Bowl, for decades, has had one of the more intriguing matchups out there. It's Washington State and Syracuse this time around on December 27th. And you've got also, right around that period of time, A couple ones here. I'll let you go for the setup here on the Fenway Bowl. You had a good line off here. I'll let you drop it here.
Well, Rick, I mean, I think finally, this is the first time in the FDH Lounge history that has entered the Twilight Zone. The Wasabi Fenway Bowl, a basketball matchup played on a baseball field, UConn, North Carolina.
Yeah.
Does anyone care? Jim Moore Jr., is he going to get one of these jobs, Rick? I don't know. Probably not. But, yeah. But I mean, it's just Carolina. But now they'll have Bill Belichick maybe flipping the coin or drawing the head. He'll definitely be on during that game talking about this stuff. And people are actually more interested in that game now.
Yeah. I think that is going to be entertaining. You look at some of the other matchups as we ramp a little closer to January 1st. Miami and Iowa State in the Camping World Stadium in the Pop-Tarts Bowl. That gets a lot of attention because of the bowl gimmick that we saw from it last year. An intriguing one, but again, Miami and Iowa State, you can't necessarily assume it's going to be a full house of players showing up on both sides.
Well, Miami. I mean, we don't even know if Cam Ward's even going to play. I mean, right. That's the. I mean, is he even going to play? A game that interests me a little bit is the Pinch Trap Bowl with Boston College and Nebraska. Boston College, you know, is another team that's dumpster the fire, but Nebraska is going to a bowl game for the first time in a long time. They'll be motivated. That's going to be one of those teams I'm going to pick. And then we have a game, you know, that's on the CW, free TV, the way it ought to be. Miami and Colorado State with the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl. You'll probably be smoking a joint on the field. Snoop Dogg was fun in the Olympics. He'll be fun in Tucson. And you know what he does, Rick? He gives those kids NIL for doing charity works during the bowl game. So they get to play, and they get paid, too.
Well,
and those schools will take the money, Miami, Ohio, and Colorado State.
I'm glad you corrected yourself the second time around here. Being the good hater that I am, don't ever just say Miami. It's Miami of Ohio, okay? They are the discount Miami school out there. Being the great hater that I am of the Miami of Ohio Red Hawks, I have to get that across every time I see their name. Historically, the Alamo Bowl has had a lot of great matchups from San Antonio. 7:30 Eastern time on December 28th, Colorado and BYU, and Deion says his stars will be in that game. That game right there, a very rare in-conference game. We don't see this too often in the bowls. I mean, if you go back to, say, I believe it was the 1979 Orange Bowl, which was Oklahoma and Nebraska. It has happened from time to time. We have two Big 12 schools here, but the key is they didn't play this year. And I think we're going to see that a little bit more as we go along over a period of time as they're trying to fill bowl slots here. That as long as it's not a rematch from in season, which interestingly, Nebraska and Oklahoma famously was from their Thanksgiving weekend rivalry back in the day. But this one here, two teams in the Big 12, they were both jockeying for the championship towards the end, both getting aced out on a tiebreaker from making the playoff or the conference championship game, and a thing of like, what would have happened if they met on the field? Now we get to find out.
Well, Rick, I mean, the Elbow Bowl always had a special place in my heart because a couple years ago, I was covering the XFL championship in San Antonio, and I got showered in confetti, so I was on that field getting showered in confetti inches away from Dwayne the Rock Johnson. So, I mean, it was just a fun moment. I mean, now I'm more clued to the Alamo Bowl as I usually will. But let's talk about a bowl game in my neck of the woods early that day. The Gold Bowl and Military Bowl. East Carolina, NC State, they're going to be going to Annapolis, Maryland. And the thing is, rumors had it that NC State did not want to play East Carolina because they opened up the season next year. But they decided to agree. And it's a rivalry game. These teams don't like each other, and if you're going to have a meaningless bowl game, you might as well have a rival game that will pack the place.
Yeah, you might as well. And I don't think for the Alamo Bowl they'll probably be doing the confetti thing. It might be shredded toilet paper from a dollar store, maybe, but who knows what. You'll have to tune in for the end of that game to see what they shower.
And Rick, the Independence Bowl with Marshall and Army. Marshall, the coach left for Southern Miss.
Yeah.
I mean, you leave. It really shows nobody wants to coach that Marshall team. Again, the Army team is great. Meanwhile, like, like around 20, 25, 30, 40 transfers from Marshall are on the transfer portal. And now, so Army, that's going to be one of those best bet locks. Take the high confidence points, Army, to kill Marshall in the independence bowl. Easy win.
Well, again, being the great hater that I am as an Ohio Bobcat alum, I got no love lost for Marshall, so good for them with losing all their players. You look at some of the other games around that period of time here. Two, I'm not going to say necessarily geographic rivals, but two teams that are relatively close to one another geographically here. Missouri and Iowa meeting in the Music City Bowl, an SEC Big Ten clash, 2:30 Eastern Time, December 30th. That's a sleeper good game here. The next day, December 31st, at noon, the ReliaQuest Bowl in Tampa. That game, I think it was the Outback Bowl back in the day. That one has traditionally had really good Big Ten and SEC matchups, and no change this year, at least as far as the name value of the programs. Michigan and Alabama. Michigan famously showed up for only one game this year, unfortunately for my dad, an alum, against Ohio State. Alabama, you don't know what version of them is going to show up, right? Because one of the Nick Saban Alabama teams back in the day, I think they dumped it to Hawaii in the Sugar Bowl when they got left out of the playoffs. So Alabama, my guess is they're going to show up motivated, and I think that Kalen DeBoer is going to have them really fired up because he has to be with a disappointing season and them missing the playoff. But that right there is going to be a fun and interesting game as well.
That's going to be an intriguing game. Another game will be the Cheese Bowl, South Carolina, Illinois. South Carolina, look who they beat. They beat Clemson. I mean, look at the teams they beat this year, right?
Yep.
South Carolina. They beat some really good teams. South Carolina, they could have been a team that could have been in the playoff if they had more teams than that.
Yeah, that's going to be a good game on ABC, 3 o'clock, the Citrus Bowl on New Year's Eve. And then you get to some of the games after January 1st. There are a couple of interesting ones here. The Gator Bowl, January 2nd, that one, 7:30 Eastern Time, Duke and Ole Miss. And the Duke's Mayo Bowl on January 3rd at 7:30 in Charlotte. That one is going to be Virginia Tech against Minnesota, who is always surprisingly lethal this time of year. And January 4th, 11 a.m., the Bahamas Bowl. I know that my great friend and fellow FDH Lounge dignitary, Chris Galloway, a fellow alum, he's been there before to watch the Bobcats. He was hoping he'd get a chance to do that again. He doesn't. Buffalo ends up snarfing the MAC spot there. It's Buffalo against Liberty in that game, January 4th, 11 a.m. Eastern Time. So, again, there is some intrigue in the rest of the bowls. One of the things, as a traditionalist, as somebody that never wanted them to go beyond the plus one in the playoffs here, I knew that it was going to lead to a devaluing of the bowl season, and I'm just grateful that it hasn't happened more than it has already. Just the fact that we're sitting here talking about a number of games having some intrigue, I didn't look forward to the bowls getting crapped on the way that they have been, and like I said, I guess we're just lucky that it's not worse so far.
Well, Rick, it's one of those kind of things, Rick, where I'll put the game on. If it's close and fun, if I'm home, I'll watch it. If I'm out and working and doing other things, I'll just watch the highlights on YouTube. If it's intriguing, Rick, I'm going to watch it. And the other thing is, Rick, which we did last year, we did a bowl recap of the intriguing game. So, Rick, you guys don't have to watch anything. We'll keep an eye out for the stuff, and we'll give you the best of the bowl season in a future show.
That's right. We'll do this after the national championship is behind us. And we look forward to, again, we'll get to this part of it now with our discussion, the college football playoff. I'm just going to start by giving you the order that I would have slotted the teams in. I think they got all the teams right. I agree that it should have been SMU in the spot as opposed to Alabama. Here's how I would have gone. I would have ended up the top two, certainly no different. Number one, Oregon. Number two, Georgia. I would have flip-flopped Arizona State and Boise State. I think Arizona State opening up the can of whoop-ass on Iowa State, and again, playing a tougher schedule through the season than Boise State did. I realize that Boise State taking Oregon down to the wire, that's very impressive, and Arizona State didn't have a single game on their schedule to match up with that, but on the totality of it, I would have gone with the Sun Devils 3. That's not like a huge difference right there. I would have gone Texas 5, Notre Dame 6, Tennessee 7. I think they got screwed out of a home game. Ohio State 8, Penn State 9, Clemson 10, Indiana 11, SMU 12. So the first round matchup still would have been Texas SMU. Well, actually, no, I take that back. It's Texas and Clemson in the real world here. So that one would be different. But tell me you wouldn't rather see Texas SMU. Notre Dame, Indiana, that one would still hold up. We would have Clemson at Tennessee, which I think would have a lot of intrigue. And then Penn State for a rematch at Ohio State. So that's how I would have had them slotted. I think that SMU being the last team in and in the 12 spot, I think that makes sense. I would have bumped Penn State down further because you could say, oh, look at the only games that they lost. They lost the two top teams and took them down to the wire. And I'm like, yeah, but what were their most impressive wins? I mean, Tennessee beat Alabama. What did Penn State do that measures up to that? So I realize I'm a Tennessee honk, but I would have bumped down Penn State and given Tennessee a home game and put them in the 7 spot for that matter.
Yeah, I mean the SEC is a more dominant conference. They should have got more home games. You have like Ohio State getting a home game. Yeah, it's just Penn State. They have a whiteout of all things at noon. Penn State had a good season, and they may have a. Some people say they may have the easiest path to the semifinals. I'm not sure about that. If they go on and play Boise State.
It is funny, and I'm gonna throw a bunch of people in sports media under the bus, even if I don't necessarily know any names off the top of my head, but I do know that I just heard general chatter from a lot of talking heads. It's being exposed how many casuals there are out there, as far as everyone, it's like, hey, this isn't fair that these teams get the 3 and 4 seeds, and that it's unfair for the 5 and 6 seeds to really be able to clean up. Yeah. Well, thanks for cluing us in for all of you who indicated that you weren't listening this entire time, because this was flagged almost from the outset by FDH Director of Research Nate Noy, who said long ago to be a 5 or a 6 seed is pretty soft at this point in time here, because you're not only getting theoretically the easiest first round matchups, you're getting teams that are clearly not the 3rd and 4th best teams in the country, but are the 3 and 4 seeds regardless. So the advantages that accrue to being in those spots there are very obvious indeed, and it really sets up well for Texas and for Penn State, and that's a thing where I think Texas earned it, but I think, quite frankly, Notre Dame should be in that spot as opposed to Penn State, and again, I would have put them 9 instead of 6. That's my biggest disagreement by far with what the committee did.
Well, it's funny, Brett, because apparently the reason why they did this in the first place was the ACC and the Big 12 wanted a bigger piece at the table. And the thing was, nobody expected Boise State to have a dominant season. I mean, AC and Big 12 expected to get those spots, and only one team did, Rick.
Yeah, and the way that it's looking from here on in, again, it might be very hard to negotiate away what's already been given to them. But as far as and to the extent that public demand is going to weigh into this going forward, just the fact that, again, we had taken for granted all the way through, certainly I had, oh, it's going to be the ACC and the Big 12 in whatever order in the 3 and 4 spots. Every week on our show, as I've been covering football throughout the season, as I've been giving my, this is how I would slot out the playoff as of this week, I've been saying the 3 and 4 seeds probably going to these two conferences. But it's one of those things where those conferences got exposed because they cannibalized each other enough, because they have a number of good but no great teams in those conferences. And in reality, they're closer to the Mountain West than they are to either the SEC or the Big Ten. And I think that is something that comes as a little bit of a surprise here. Boise State being in that spot is reflective of it, that the gap between the Mountain West, at least before it gets cannibalized by the Pac-12, but that's another story for another day, but it's actually closer to those two than those two are to the Big Ten and the SEC.
Oh, that's definitely true. And it's funny because college football has a lot more power this year. And the thing is, Rick, with the 12 teams, more people are coming to the table. And it's not going to go chalk. And the thing is, in the quarterfinals, those 3 and 4 seeds, if they win, then I have big upsets, Rick. I mean, Boise State being in the Fiesta Bowl in Spillane territory, and plus Gentry, he wants to break Barry Sanders' record. He's like 131 yards to break Barry Sanders' record for the most rushing yards in a season. So it's not, I mean, it's not, it wouldn't be a surprise if Boise State won the game. Arizona State's been one of the highest teams in college football. That team was picked to finish last in the Big 12, and they surprised anybody, and they dominated. So would it surprise people? It would probably surprise people more if Arizona State won the second round than Boise State, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that would be really interesting. I think Boise State would have an easier time based on the matchup. But, again, Arizona State, everything is relative, right? Compared to the rest of the world, I was a believer in Arizona because I went back and I looked at Fantasy Football Draftology 2024, which is still available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com. I picked them 14th out of 16 teams in the conference. So relative to the rest of the world, I'm a believer in Arizona State. I knew it all along, I guess I could say. But as you look at this here, and just to kind of take a macro view of this, I was reading a thing a little bit earlier today about SMU and about how they have really benefited from NIL money here. Because, again, a lot of rich folks in Texas, a lot of rich SMU alums. And this kind of ties back to what we said about Belichick before in UNC, is that I'm sure this was part of Belichick's due diligence with going to North Carolina, is I think there's a lot of rich, successful people that have gone there. So it's one of these things where I think we all just assumed, oh, you know, the power schools, the Georgias, the Alabamas, the Oregons, the Texases, they're going to be able to buy up everybody. And I think in this landscape where we've seen a little bit more parity this year than we expected to see, I think it might be working the other way around because you're seeing just enough rich folks at just enough other schools buying big-time prospects also. I mean, it's happening in college basketball. The fact that as I've been looking at what's been happening there and getting a beat on next year's NBA draft, like how the heck are two of the top college players in the country both going to Rutgers? Well, NYC area, a lot of money there, apparently, a big NIL thing at Rutgers. So this is what's happening, is it like there's a bunch of rich folks that can spring up in a bunch of different places. The only degree to which I think we're going to see where it really manifests itself is we're now seeing Larry Ellison, like the third richest person in the world, now deciding that he's going to become a big donor at Michigan, and he helped him lure away the big quarterback prospect for next year. It's going to take basically billionaires getting in and throwing around their money to really be separators. But I think thus far with what we're seeing with NIL in the first year of the playoffs coming in here, I think the fact that a school like SMU is able to make the playoff, I think that indicates that it's been a little bit of the opposite of what we expected. That there's more rich folks at more different schools that, like, not that SMU is going to challenge for a national championship, but that there might be kids on their roster that we just assumed would be going to Georgia or Texas or another place like that, but instead they're going and taking the money from the rich folks in Dallas.
Well, Rick, I mean, SMU was a powerhouse in the 80s. They got the death penalty. Now they can do the death penalty and be fine. SMU was always a team that, I mean, they basically gave up 10 years of TV revenue just to get in the AC. They were so desperate to get in there. AC, we're not giving you a dime. People in Texas were fine. The thing is, SMU is a team that, it wasn't shocking to beat Penn State. None of these matchups in the first round, Rick, whoever wins, it would not surprise me at all. I want to see upsets. I don't want to see chalk. I like seeing Cinderella. It'd be fun that way. The only thing, the biggest fear is you want to, I mean, hopefully when it gets to the semifinals and the championship, you don't have a lopsided where you have TCU and Georgia where that massacre happens again. That's all I'm saying.
Well, and we're going to see all kinds of reminders during the college football season. You talked about SMU in the 80s. We will be seeing reminders all throughout the bowl season of how much the world has changed since the 80s. In the 80s, again, the old Pony Express there and all of the success that they had, SMU, like you said, getting the death penalty for what? Recruiting violations, paying players, which they are now openly doing, as is the rest of the world. You talked about Snoop Dogg before with the Arizona Bowl, a guy that's been busted for drugs, among other things, over a period of time. Now the guy runs dispensaries and sponsors a bowl game. So the world has changed there. ESPN televising most of the games here. Remember back in the 80s when it was taboo for Jimmy the Greek to even mention point spreads on TV? ESPN now owns their own casino. So we're seeing all kinds of reminders throughout the course of the bowl season and beyond about how much the world has changed over the last couple of decades. And it does bring a warm feeling of nostalgia, I would say, to see SMU up there. And if it was an SMU-Miami first-round game, that would have been really interesting. Miami wasn't able to hold up their end of the bargain going out against Syracuse. SMU, again, not able to win their conference, but making it as an at-large. But that's one of those deals there where SMU and Miami were kind of like ships passing in the night. Like I don't think they ever had a high-profile game back in the 80s. But two schools that were good at the same time, really, really good. Great, I would say. It would have been interesting to see if we would have seen them match up this year.
Yeah, it definitely would have been. It's, I mean, Rick. The bottom line is, Rick, I mean, the early bowl games are watered down, but these games are kind of exciting. These playoff games they're going to be glued. We're going to have record ratings. We'll see how the games do against the NFL games, but I think people are going to watch. I think people are definitely going to watch these games. The excitement, the home field, the weather conditions that can be impactful in Ohio State and Penn State, so anything can happen in these games, and that's going to be fun to see these games go forward. And the thing is, I think the teams that have a bye are going to have an edge to winning this thing, because one less game, one less wear and tear. And the thing is, Rick, Tennessee and Ohio State are going to tear each other apart. They may not even be ready to play Oregon the next round.
Exactly. Although, you always get to the thing when it's around New Year's of like rest versus rust. So that's something that's going to be a factor as well here in terms of, like, you know, Oregon and Georgia. They're just going to be able to go out and flip a switch New Year's Day. That will be interesting to see. But the first round
game. And Georgia has a quarterback situation. We don't know if the guy's even going to play on that Hail Mary attempt. He got injured, and now you have a guy with very little experience. So we don't even know where that stands. But, you know, with Georgia either.
Yeah, and that's, again, they're going to have the time on that one there. But Carson Beck, I wouldn't be necessarily expecting him back in there. The question is, can they win a game or two with a backup quarterback there, which I think may very well be the case possibly. But looking at the first-round games here, I'm just going to kind of throw them out there and, you know, let you take them wherever you want to take them here with your thoughts on this. So the Friday night game is going to be, unsurprisingly, ESPN hanging on to this one for primetime. Number 10, Indiana at number 7, Notre Dame. Really the only game where there could have been any amount of intrigue whatsoever for Indiana. You knew they were going to find a way to match these two up, as the committee always does. Saturday, early afternoon, number 11, SMU at number 6, Penn State for the whiteout, as you talked about previously. And then late afternoon, in the second game that will be on TNT, going up against an NFL game, number 12, Clemson at number 5, Texas. And then in primetime, as you discussed previously, number 8, Ohio State, hosting number 9, Tennessee, in what some are calling the Rick Morris Bowl. But as far as how these games all shape up here, again, I'm pretty much liking the chalk across the board. I don't know that they're all going to cover. I don't think Ohio State's necessarily going to cover, but I do give them the edge in that game. Although, again, if they get off to a tough start, that crowd could make it tough. And it kind of depends on which Ryan Day we're going to get. If it's the Ryan Day that always clenches up his butt cheeks in big games, they will not survive. But I go back to what they did a couple of years ago against Georgia in the Peach Bowl, where he just kind of let it rip. And I have a feeling that's what's going to happen. When Ryan Day's back is ultimately up against the wall, that's what he does. He kind of forgets that he's a choker and just lets it rip. And I expect that that's what's going to happen in that game there. But what are your thoughts on the first-round games?
First-round games, I mean, if the game was played in Indiana, I would give it Indiana the edge. But the fact it's played at home for Notre Dame, I think I give Notre Dame the edge. I mean, the SMU Penn State game, that can be that's gonna be a fun game. That's gonna be a fun shootout game. It's gonna come down to the wire. SMU came so close to being Clemson. That's gonna be a fun, entertaining, high shootout game. But I give Penn State the edge playing home, the wideout crowd. SMU's not gonna be able to know how to handle that. The Texas Clemson game, I think Clemson can win that game. Texas has to prove it to me that they can win big games, and they haven't. They lost to Georgia twice. So, I mean, I'm going to pick Clemson as an upset with that. Why not? I mean, they won big games before. Dabo Swinney's been to the dance and won before. Doesn't matter how you get in there, Rick, as long as you get in there. As far as, like, Ohio State, Tennessee, I have to give the edge to Ohio State in that matchup because Tennessee proved to me that you can win a big game on the road, and they have. Enough said.
Yeah, well, the only thing I would say about Texas and Clemson of where I'm inclined to go the other way is just, yeah, I go to the old adage of you can't beat something with nothing. And Clemson's got to prove it to me because they've had a very lackluster season. They're lucky that Miami choked and let them into the ACC championship game. They're lucky that they were able to hang on against SMU. And, yeah, I mean, it might be that they're able to pull a first-round upset here. And I will say, I mean, if Texas goes out in the first round, the seat is going to start getting a little hot for Steve Sarkisian there because fans are expecting more this season, and I think they have every right to expect that. You look at the second-round games here, so you and I would agree on three of the four matchups that you would get Boise against Penn State, and I believe what would be that would be the Fiesta Bowl. And Notre Dame against Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. Ohio State, Oregon, an old school Big Ten, Pac-10 matchup in the Rose Bowl. But whoops, they're both Big Ten schools now. And so you would say Clemson versus Arizona State, which would be an amazing game, by the way. That would be in the Peach Bowl, I believe. And so I would say Texas and Arizona State in that game. And that's another one where, again, I guess I like the chalk in all of the matchups here. I can see Boise giving Penn State a real run, but I think Penn State, again, with this very, very favorable draw, I think they can make it to the semifinals. Georgia-Notre Dame, that could be very competitive if Georgia suffers for the loss of Carson Beck, which I think he will probably not be playing in the game. I'll take Texas, regardless of some of their struggles. I would take them in that game against Arizona State. And Oregon to finish off Ohio State season once and for all. What would you think about the four bowl games here, which will be one on December 31st. That'll be the Fiesta Bowl, and then the triple header on New Year's Day.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't shock me if Texas wins that game, but I mean, I think regardless, if Texas beats Clemson, they could beat Arizona State. Second game, I like Boise. I'm going to lean toward Boise State. I think Boise State can beat Penn State. Playing festival, they have a history of winning big games. They've been in big games, so they're a team that I can see getting to the semifinals. Oregon, I think Ohio State or Tennessee is going to be beat up, and Oregon's going to win that game. And I think Georgia, even with the quarterback situation, their defense is great. So I'm very confident that Georgia can get to the semifinals. Oh, by the way, Rick, we have breaking news on the North Carolina front.
All right.
Adam Schefter reports Mike Lombardi is leading BSIN to become Bill Belichick GM at North Carolina. So we have breaking news. Now he has his buddy, Mike Lombardi, being the GM for his college.
It's hilarious because, again, I've never thought much of Lombardi as a personnel guy. I have thought that he's been a great broadcaster with Visa, and he's really surprised me. But I was thinking about this the other day. He was really talking up Belichick being able to pull that off. Now we know why. But it's one of those things where it's like, why did Belichick never bring him back to the Patriots there? It's really interesting. He just kind of let him flounder out there with other teams and ultimately end up out of the NFL. Now he brings him to UNC. That's a head-scratcher to me. But breaking news, as you said, we're going live to tape as this stuff is coming across the transom. The national semifinals here, I would have it being Georgia, Penn State, and Oregon, Texas. And for all of the questions about Georgia, whether or not they have Carson Beck, and I think they may not in that game, I think James Franklin, again, he's got to prove it to me. I mean, he can make it to the semifinals on one of the softer paths that's out there, but I don't think they can beat Georgia. I'll take Oregon over Texas, so I'm looking at the chalkiest of national championship matchups, which would be in Atlanta on January 20th, Inauguration Day and MLK Day, coincidentally, Oregon and Georgia. That's who I see making it there.
I agree with you. I'm going to go with Oregon and Georgia in that championship, and we'll see what happens. I mean, like I said, Rick, the team, I think I give Oregon. Oregon's been the best team only undefeated team in the college bowl season. Even the best team. I'm going to give Oregon to win the national championship. I mean, it's just amazing that who would have thought a defensive coach and Dan Lanning could actually, you don't have to be a spread running gun, Chip Kelly coach to win a championship in college football.
Yeah, Dan Lanning coming back to the ATL area to take down the Bulldogs in the national championship game. I'm with you on that. And how hilarious is this? If we go to, we've gone to a 12-team playoff this year, and at the end of the year, according to me and you, it's going to be the only undefeated team that ends up winning the national championship. We didn't need a playoff. We could have just done the poll system like back in the day, because Oregon would have been the team voted the national champion after probably one round of bowls here. We could have just given it to Oregon and skipped the playoff the whole time. The whole thing seems unnecessary after all of this, Fran Stuckberry.
Well, I mean, Rick, I mean, hopefully we're wrong. Hopefully we see some upsets in Cinderella. But the thing is, my biggest fear, if that happens, we might have massacre games, which you may see out very soon.
Yeah, we may see that. But it's going to be a fascinating bowl season and college football playoff, completely unprecedented, as this season has been. And like I said, I will stand by what I said before. I think it's the biggest sports story of 2024. Now, again, the fact that we've seen a relatively lackluster NFL season and sort of a paucity of other big stories in the world of sports here, some of it is the lack of competition in that regard. But you look at this, you look at the way that it's playing out, and I think what we've started to hear the last couple of years that people have been talking about, because, you know, for maybe a decade or so ago, it's been, hey, at some point in time, the NBA surpassed the MLB for being the number two biggest sport, you know, in North America. And in recent years, people have been saying, actually, the NBA is number three because college football is number two. I think that's been proven without a doubt as this new system has taken off.
It's going to be exciting. The playoff games are going to be fun. Hopefully, we get some better bowl games that come out of nowhere. But, Rick, we have more breaking news. West Virginia expected to hire Rich Rodriguez as the ex-Mountaineers head back to his alma mater after a 17-year hiatus. We'll get more into that on the bowl season. But that's a good hire. He wanted West Virginia. He'll make them better. That's a good hire for West Virginia. If you're gonna bring a coach back, at least he knows how to run offense.
As long as we're going to be in this vein here of like Rich Rodriguez going back to West Virginia, hopefully the next news that breaks, I don't know if it'll break in the amount of time that we're taping here, but if somebody was to tell me Frank Solich is coming back to take the helm at Ohio University, I wouldn't fart at that happening. So I don't think I'll get that lucky as a Bobcat here, but yeah, a good call.
And another coach is coming back. I mean, we'll do more to coach, but Scott Frost is going back to UCF. He bombed Nebraska, and now he gets to go back to UCF.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we'll see how it all plays out, but it's going to be a fascinating bowl season / college football playoff, and as we did last year, it'll be fun to recap it with you at the end, Fran Stuckberry, and again, always enjoy following your content at Our Sports Central. That's oursportscentral.com. Thank you so much for being here today, my friend, and breaking it all down with me.
Thanks, Rick. It's been an absolute pleasure, and bowl season is very soon.
It is.
Take care, guys. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think we're within about 100 hours or so from it as we're taping here. Hard to believe. But, yeah, it will be pretty wild to watch. But thank you so much, Fran Stuckberry, and thank you all for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1788.